Everybody watching the clock? You watching that clock? No more Mr. Nice Guy. You are not in your seat. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Wow. That was fun. Where's Paul?
Here.
Why'd you move? I guess you're spitting too much when you're speaking there, Alex.
At least I don't have baseball tobacco. Chewing tobacco.
All right.
Okay, we continue. Become a person of influence, not just one of authority. Persons of influence take the initiative to care for their people. Patch Adams said it very well. Indifference, the greatest disease of all. How do you respond when people open up with their pain? How do you respond when people open up with their joy? Are you indifferent? Have you heard of the self-affirmation box? This is Alex Castillo, Psychology 101. In other words, you don't have to believe it. I believe everyone has an imaginary self-affirmation box. It's a huge box. It's like a balikbayan box, okay? And there's a slit on top. It's beside everyone's workplace. I call it the self-affirmation box. Some people call it the emotional bank account. And it's big because of the expectation of everyone. I expect a lot of affirmation. And every morning they open up that box and they see nothing. And so when you compliment somebody, which is a very good way to start a relationship, when they open that box, and let's say somebody did a good job and you went to the cubicle of that person, he or she wasn't there, you left a post-it note. Nice work on the PowerPoint this morning. He or she comes back and looks at his or her self-affirmation box and says, I knew it. I'm a worthwhile individual. You see, because someone is affirming me, okay? And so, you know, if you're indifferent, you're not going to send a lot of thank you notes or nice job notes or way to go notes. But you should. We're wired to catch people doing something wrong. We ought to catch people doing something right and compliment them for it. Now, this one you got to bring home. See, if you have kids and your kids, just like my kids, are yearning for parental approval, yearning for parental affirmation. Fathers, your daughters need your hug. Okay, I'm going to pretend Frances here is my daughter, because I just so I don't get into a harassment issue, okay? I mean, my daughter needs my hug. She better know what a clean hug feels like, so she can distinguish between a dirty hug. Are you with me? Okay. Now, gentlemen, your sons also need your touch, but it's in a different way. You know, they need affirmation. And so I got into the habit at home, no kid will pass me by except without getting hit. I have 3 boys, okay? And so they, you know, we hit one another all the time. It's like an acknowledgement. A, you exist. B, I like you. Okay? And I have 1 daughter, and you know who runs the place. She's the youngest, too. But, you know, everyone has a self-affirmation box. Okay? You know, I used to coach people who look for jobs. I am, in the barcadas of my children, I am Tito Resume. I get emails saying, Tito, can you please help me with my resume? And so I have a lot of wonderful resume templates. And I tell them in the interview process, I'll tell you something. I explain to them a self-affirmation box. I say, you know what? If you want to get your application on top of the interviewer's table, do one thing. After the first interview, make sure you write a thank you letter. Say something like, thank you for your time this morning. It was great to talk to you. You don't have to lie. You know what? Because that HR person will go to her self-affirmation box expecting tons of mail and, as usual, getting nothing except your email. And she's going to say, I knew it. I'm a worthwhile individual. Okay? And he or she will never forget you. So, because some of the most neglected people on earth are HR people. They are the fourth most neglected people on earth. The third most are mothers. The second most are fathers. And the most neglected person on earth is God, you see. Because few people say thank you. John Wooden, UCLA Bruins coach. The winningest coach in the history of basketball, bar none. Okay? He told his team, whenever you make an assist, whenever you receive an assist and you convert, make sure you look at your teammate who gave you the assist and acknowledge your teammate for the assist. One guy asked a question, coach, what if he's not looking? Now, listen carefully what he said. John Wooden said, I guarantee you he is. Because everyone has a big self-affirmation box. Okay? He said, I guarantee you he is. But try doing something good. Don't you find yourself waiting for someone to compliment you? You know, did anyone notice what a good job I did? All right. Do not be indifferent. Do not be indifferent. You're building relationships. You take the initiative. Okay? Have you heard, there's a lot of Alex Castillo 101 here. Have you heard of the curve of indifference? The curve of indifference. Okay? It goes like this. On the vertical axis is number of divorces. On the horizontal axis is time. I do 0 to 20 years and 0 to 100% divorce. It is an inverted bell-shaped curve. A bell-shaped curve goes like this, correct? It's an inverted bell-shaped curve. Number of divorces are very high in the first 3 years. A lot of reasons. I should not have gotten married. I should not have gotten married to this person. So they split. But then statistics show it goes down and stays down for a long time. And it goes way back up again after 20 years. Guess what? Guess why? Why do they stay together and then split? Let's stay for the kids, honey. So what happens if the basis of the relationship is external to the two people, like kids? When the kids go to college or fly the coop, the woman wakes up, looks across the bed, and asks herself the question, who is this stranger? The man wakes up, looks across the bed at his wife and says, who is this person? I don't know this person, because in the intervening period, rather than work out their differences, they decide to be indifferent to one another. That's why I call it the curve of indifference. Rather than working out, I mean, I don't know what marriage does not have problems. I mean, imagine two different people raised differently, and you bring them together. Are you crazy? Of course you're going to have conflict. Of course you're going to have tension, no matter how quote-unquote compatible you are. Because we are all selfish. And we need to work hard not to be selfish. So the curve of indifference is there, and that is why it spikes up. For every two weddings going on, there's a divorce proceeding going on. In the Philippines, there's no divorce. But would you believe the rate of separations is just as high? I mean, my son came home one day, and he was in high school. He said, "Dad, Mom, you have no idea. We have a barkada of 10 or 11 kids." My eldest boy was about 14 years old. "Hey, I found out something today. You and Dad are the only ones still together. All nine of my friends, the mom is not her mom, or the dad is not his dad." And he said, "You guys are weird. You know, you're still together." So you need a lot of care to build relationships. Do you believe in the open door policy? This is not a trick question. By the way, I want to hear from the campus types, okay? You campus types, stop absorbing and start contributing to this workshop, all right? The open door policy became a good thing because of the Old Testament benchmark of closed door. In the Old Testament, you walk into the king's court without an appointment, you're dead, literally. That's why, what's her name? Esther said, "If I perish, I perish. But I'm going to walk in even without being asked by the king." So it was, leadership was isolated from the people. So some genius said, "Hey, you know, let's be humane. Let's open the door. Let people come in." That's the open door policy. And it's a very good policy. But what I want to introduce to you, some interpretation of the open door policy that hopefully will change your life. I believe in the open door policy. But the door is open not to let people in, but to let the leader out, so that he can do MBWA, management by walking around. You got to get out, come down from your pedestal, get out of your prison, otherwise known as your office or desk, and connect with your people. If you want to be a good people manager, you better walk around. Okay? I know of a pastor, his congregation knows if he's there, because his office is closed. True. They know if he's not there because the door is open. He doesn't like people. I want to ask him, but why did you become a pastor? I mean, all right? See, you can be a pastor, you can be the most gregarious looking person in the pulpit. But what counts is back here on earth. Earth to pastor, come in please. Are you still a connecting person? Are you the same person on the ground as you are in the pulpit? Many pastors are not, you see. And members get confused. Empathy. What is empathy? It has to do with shoes. Putting yourself in someone else's shoes. I'm going to teach you empathy. Will you please stand up? Index finger to the ceiling. Index finger to the ceiling. Can you make a clockwise circular movement? You can check your watch if you don't know what is clockwise, okay? All right, just continue. Is it clockwise? Continue, okay? Now, continue that motion. Bring your hand slowly, but continue the motion. Bring your hand slowly and look at it from the top. Is it clockwise? What is it? Are you sure? Bring it back up. What is it? This is your people looking at you. Boss, it's clockwise. This is you looking at your people. No, it's counterclockwise. You dumb, okay? I'm telling you, sir, it's clockwise. Hey, come on. It's counterclockwise. Sit down. The same phenomenon, okay? The same movement viewed from two different angles produce two diametrically opposed views that are equally valid. Are you with me? Okay. The same event, the same movement, the same sentiment, the same word, viewed from two different angles, produce two different points of view that are equally valid. And that's why people divorce. There's no empathy. Who's right? Both are right. And that's why countries go to war. Who's right? Both are right. It depends where you're coming from, you see. If you want to build relationships, you must learn to do the unnatural act of coming out of your shoes and putting yourself in someone else's shoes and looking at life from his or her point of view. And, you know, let's say Karen and I are having a discussion and I am debating her about my point of view. And we can't seem to agree. What the leader needs to do is to go to the side of the other person and look at life from her point of view, and you will discover an amazing thing. You're going to say, wow, I never saw it from this side, Karen, and I see your point. You have a valid point. Now back to my position here, Karen, will you kindly come here and look at life from my point of view? Because I humbled myself and looked at the issue from her point of view, is it likely she will come over and look at life from my point of view? Yes. And when that happens, she will see the validity of my position. And then we're going to say, now, what are we going to do now? You're right and I'm right. Well, that's when you do a win-win solution. But you can't do win-win until you see the other's point of view. You need to learn how to empathize. Policies. They are made by people. They are made for people to put people first. Policies do not exist in and of themselves. If someone comes to you and says, can you help me with this? If your response is, that's not in the policy, sorry. Is that caring? What if it's not in the policy? What is the caring response? It's not in the policy, but you want to be a caring supervisor. How can you respond? I'm not going to continue until you give me an answer. How? What do you say? What do you tell me? I need help. It's not in the policy. So what should you, is that it? It's not in the policy, but let me ask my boss. That's what I need. Sometimes people come to you for help, not even expecting you to solve their problems, but just they just need a sympathetic heart and ear. I'll see what I can do. And you better see what you can do. And you can come back and say, you know what? We can't really help you, but look, I've got 10 pesos here. Can that help? Yeah, that's how you do it. That's how you do it. Yes, Lynn.
I think in a lot of situations where we really can't be the one to provide the answer for it, people also appreciate if you say, you know, we can't do anything about it, you know, structurally or within the corporate policies, but, you know, can I pray for you and let's believe that God is going to be the one to, you know, bring your answer, bring your breakthrough.
The issue, yes, Joe.
Just looking at the curve of indifference, I had two thoughts. One was, you said in the intervening period, they should have built strong. And I think even in working relationships, before the crisis hits, like an offense or you know, where people start having a falling out, we should build strong while it's calm. You know, while everyone's still getting along or while there's still a honeymoon stage where people are still okay with each other. That way, when there's testing of the relationship, there's something to fall back on. And in line with that, I think sometimes, I wrote for myself, don't be fooled by a lull. You know, like it's not like a crisis moment. It seems like we have good relationship because I'm not mad at Paul. I'm not mad at King. It seems like we're okay naman. And I sometimes take that as a sign that there's nothing wrong, not realizing that I haven't really built anything, so that when there's an offense, then the roof falls on, and you're like, what was that all about? Parang ganun.
As a matter of fact, you don't build relationships to avoid a crisis. You build relationships because it's a lifestyle. Okay. In Del Monte, I was a walking around type of person. Okay. Every morning, I'd walk up and down the aisle, the corridors of our office, like my wife would walk up and down the aisles of a supermarket. Okay. And I would, because I was there 23 years, so I hired just about every supervisor and manager there. And I know them. So I would walk up and down and just look at people. And because I know them so well, because I do it every day, if you so happen to have a twitch in your face, I would see the difference. So one day I saw it. So I knocked and said, "Hey, how are you?" And she said, "You have a minute?" So I sat down. And I had barely sat down and she began to cry. And cry. And cry. And cry. It was about 15 minutes. And I was panicking. And like a good counselor, I knew what to do. I just shut up. And when I saw a longer than usual pause in the sobbing, I said, "What happened?" Well, she was the one of the members of the tandem. The office was teasing them. It blossomed into a relationship. And she was in marketing and he was in sales. And they were going to get married. Invitations printed, engagement ring on her finger. Last night she found out her groom-to-be got someone else pregnant. And like a good soldier, she walks into the office and tries to work. And of course I didn't know what to do. I said, "Look, I don't really know what to say. But if you want to talk, I mean, I'm going to go back to my office. Just go there." Okay, fast forward a year later, I was retiring. So I was doing my walk around. And she said, "Alex." I said, "Look, I just want to say goodbye. I'm taking early retirement." She said, "I know. Can you promise me something?" I said, "Sure, what?" "If ever I meet someone again, if ever I fall in love with someone again, if ever I will get married again, will you promise to go to my wedding?" I said, "Hey, invite me." Okay? And she told me, "You remember last year?" "Yes, how can I forget last year?" She said, "That night I went home to my dad, to our house, and I told my dad what happened." And she said, you know, Dad, why I like working for Del Monte? Because when your heart is broken, the president will sit down with you for half an hour." And her mom told her, "Never leave that company, whatever happens." Okay? I mean, one act of kindness, okay, builds a relationship forever. Okay? A year later, into my retirement, I receive an invitation. She was actually going to get married. And so I was in the wedding. And I made sure I went up to her and say, "Hey, I'm here." You know? You build a strong relationship by caring. Okay? And I warn you, caring takes time. Okay? Caring for people takes time. You know, people get in the way of this people business. Come on. I mean, people are getting in the way. We are a people business. We're here to save souls. And you know, caring for people gets in the way. Duh. You see, you know, you want this ministry to take off, make sure you're caring for the people in your team as much as you're caring for the souls that we're trying to win for the Lord. All right. Integrity, okay? The foundation of influence. You can't build a relationship if there is no integrity. The simple case for integrity in managing people. If people don't trust you, what? They won't follow you. They won't commit and give you their best. And you cannot grow your ministry or your business without committed people. Okay? If leadership were a building and trust is its foundation, and you remove trust, what happens to the building? Collapses. Okay? The root word for integrity is integer. An integer, I'm not a mathematician by any stretch of the imagination, integer, I find out, means a whole number. It is indivisible by no number except itself. Is that the definition, engineers? Okay. Now, if I have cancer of the fingertip, the small fingertip, am I sick or am I healthy? But it's just a fingertip. You know why I'm sick? Because our bodies are integrated wholes. Okay? So, integrity is your life is whole. Okay? Pardon the pun. If you don't have integrity, your life will be full of holes. It won't be whole. That doesn't work too well. All right. John Maxwell said, there is no such thing as business ethics. Just ethics. It's one of those absolutes. There's no such thing as business ethics, home ethics, church ethics. You either have ethics or you don't. Because life is an integrated whole. Okay? Now, some of you heard this joke. Guy went on a date and brought his date to KFC. It was a drive-thru. Okay? This is not a very, this is a cheap date, okay? KFC na drive-thru pa, okay? True story. For some reason, the store manager, instead of handing out a box of chicken, handed out a box of cash because he put the cash proceeds of the day in a box and his goal was to deposit it to the bank later. So he made a mistake. Instead of a box of chicken, he handed over a box of cash. The guy and his girlfriend go to the park. They open up the box of chicken. Lo and behold, they have cash instead of chicken. There's a moment of weakness there where he contemplated, we can fly to Mexico. But said, we got to do the right thing. And so he brings the box of cash back to the store. The store manager is so happy. He said, you know what? I will triple your chicken order, and it's for free. And please don't leave. I've called the television station, the radio station, the newspapers. I want a picture with you. You're the most honest guy in town. He said, sir, I wish you didn't do that. The girl in the car is not my wife. Now, was that person a person of integrity in financial matters? Yes. Was he a person of integrity in relational matters? Was he a person of integrity, period? No. Cannot be. Cannot be. What is integrity? Do I demonstrate character in my decisions? Integrity will challenge you to make decisions that are against you. And it's a test of integrity. We had an opening for a national sales manager in Del Monte. The two candidates were Eggy and George. True names. George was invented in Del Monte. We hired George from school. And George did not come from the top schools. He came from the even third-tier schools. Okay, but he was very bright, very hardworking, great character. He rose through the ranks. Eggy was from Ateneo. And then he went to Procter & Gamble. Then he went to San Miguel. And we hired him from San Miguel. And he rose up, and they were now the two candidates. We analyzed the situation, and George was ahead. Oh, by a nose, but ahead nonetheless. But we were afraid because Eggie's resume was nicer, that if we promoted George, we might lose Eggie to another company because he would be getting a lot of job offers. He was getting a lot of job offers. And so we said, you know what? Let's do the right thing. Let's promote George. But in our company, what we do is if you lose, we will send a delegation to you before we announce it. First, we tell George, you're the one, but don't say anything until tomorrow when we announce it. Then we went to Eggie. I sent a group to Eggie to tell Eggie, it's George, but you're a very strong candidate. The next opening, it'll be you. What was musical to my ears is when the delegation came back to me and they told me what Eggie said. Eggie said, I'm happy for George, he's my friend. Number two, I know how you guys think, and I trust you. He said, I am not leaving Del Monte. Eggie is still there. Okay? Now, that's integrity. And I told myself, wow, we must have been doing something right. Because here's a guy who could have left the company for another job because he was disappointed. But he was not, and I was very happy. Do I respect my people as individuals? Manny was the marketing director. I was senior vice president for sales and marketing. We had a marketing budget meeting. It's one of those, no one goes home until we finish this thing tonight. Okay? Are you familiar with that? Right, rings a bell. And so the marketing people were there, and we were meeting. I don't know what happened to me. For some reason, I began to berate Manny. Manny was the marketing director, and I began to berate him in front of his people. We had pizza sent in. When the pizza comes in, I said, let's take a break. So we all got our slices of pizza. I went back to my office. As I was munching on my slice, the Holy Spirit said, bad boy, Alex. I said, it was very clear to me what I needed to do. And so we reconvened, and I told everybody, okay, before we reconvene, there's something I want to say. I said, I embarrassed Manny in front of all of you. I should not have done that. I should have spoken to Manny in private. But I did. That is wrong, and that is unbecoming of me. And I went to Manny. I looked at Manny. He was beside me. Looked him in the eye, and I said, Manny, will you forgive me? Manny later told me no one of his bosses ever asked for his forgiveness. Ever. So his jaw fell on the table, and I had to return it to his face like this. Okay? He said, you know, we men, we don't know how to deal with these situations. There's nothing to forgive, Alex. Okay. Yeah. In men speak, that means I've been forgiven, correct? Okay. Fifteen years later, I'm running a John Maxwell seminar. Well, guess who walks in? Manny had left the company and had become president of one of the food companies in the Philippines. Guess who walks into register? Manny and his top executives. He sits there and says, you know, Alex, I've been telling my people about you. What a jerk you are. No, he didn't say that. He said, I wanted them to hear you. Unbeknownst to Manny, I use that example all the time. So when I'm using this example, Manny's right here. He couldn't stand it. And he said, Alex, can I borrow the mic? He gets the mic and I say, oh, here I go. I mean, my reputation is ruined, okay? He faces the class and he says, I'm Manny. I'm the Manny Alex is talking about. And he said, I just want to vouch for this story. So I said, Manny, since you've ruined everything, let me ask in front of the class. I said, Manny, have you forgiven me? I didn't say that. Manny, you know what? I forgot what I got angry with you for. You know what? Wrong question. He fed it back to me like it happened 5 minutes ago. Something that happened 15 years ago. He fed it back to me. I said, Manny, have you really forgiven me, Pare? He said, Alex, I'm here. Am I not? So, you know, I learned two things about leadership. Well, two things. Number one, you don't have to forget in order to forgive. Because forgiveness is a decision. In fact, we never forget. I don't know about you. I never forget. But you see, you can make a decision to forgive even if you don't forget. So don't worry if you haven't forgotten. As long as you make that decision to forgive. Okay? And number two, I realized that, you know, people will respect you for all of your weaknesses if you will humble yourself and ask for forgiveness. And, you know, my relationship with Manny is like either father-son or elder brother, younger brother. He will not make a career move without calling me and asking me for my opinion. I mean, this is the jerk that embarrassed him in front of his people. But you know what? You know, mistakes are not final. And there's always humility, and there's always the power of humility. And we bump into one another very often in the supermarket. He lives in Alabang as well. And, you know, I love him and he loves me. We have a relationship, okay? A robust. And that relationship transcended the workplace. Okay. Do I recognize the contribution of my people to the ministry's effectiveness? You don't need a better illustration than Steve Merle. I joined Victory 5 years ago. I couldn't figure out who was the leader. Then this American stood up and says, "I'm Steve, I'm one of the pastors." So I said, "Who's the head honcho here?" It's in some churches, you walk in, within 3 seconds, you know who runs the place. Here, I couldn't figure out who ran the place. Because Steve is so humble. It's amazing. That's why Victory is what it is. And that's why you guys are as excited as you are. Because of the humility of Steve. And you know, his habit, he always talks about other people. I was invited to, what do you call that meeting? Once a month, Metro Manila meeting here? Staff meeting. And some missionaries were with Steve, and he asked them to stand up, and he told them, you know, these are the guys who are really doing all the work. And I said, wow, I need to learn from this guy. Steve has the habit of attributing everything to other people. When there's bad news, it's him. And there's good news, it's other people. And he has a self-deprecating style in preaching that just draws you to him, but he will shove you away because he wants you to be drawn to the Lord. So are you a person of integrity? I hate this survey. I'll give you 30 seconds to answer it. It's one or zero. It's a binary issue, one or zero. There's no such thing as 80% integrity, okay? 30 seconds. Ready? Go. Okay, summary of number 3. Be a person of influence rather than one of authority. Elicit commitment. Elicit commitment by building strong relationships. Build strong relationships by being genuinely caring and having empathy and demonstrating integrity to your people. Let's go to number 4, and 11 minutes, that's okay. We will use whatever time we have. The 4th way to become a better people manager, mentor and coach, then empower your people. In this section, there are 2 questions. Are you mentoring your people? And is anyone mentoring you? The answers to both questions have to be yes. Because if it's yes on the first and no on the second, you're not going to last. You won't have the wisdom to continue. Okay? The impact of mentoring cannot be underestimated. One of my favorite mentors is an English-Canadian named Paul Burry. He had the audacity to believe that a 26-year-old brand manager in Pepsi-Cola can become a bottling plant general manager. And so at the age of 26, my wife, myself, and my 2 small boys were shipped out to Tacloban later. I became, at 26, the general manager of the Pepsi-Cola bottling company in Tanawan later. Okay? Anybody from later here? Okay, maram ka magwari-wari. May ada kang notisya, parte sa bagyo. You know, those are the only things I know, by the way. 300 people. I was one of the youngest, and I was the boss. Because Paul Berry told me, Alex, you're going to make it here. He said, you're going to make it if I have to drag you to the finish line. He saw something in me that even my mother did not see. And my mother loved me very much, I guarantee you. All right? And so, wow. When Paul looked at me, he saw a 6'4" person. I was only 5'7". But that's mentoring. See, he believed in me so much that I, you know, eventually believed in myself as well. Rod Salazar in Warner Lambert, one of the smartest people I've ever met. He taught me structure, process, and people. He told me, Alex, by the time I'm through with you, I can throw you in any business situation and you can structure it. You can identify the burning issues and you can identify whether it's structural, it's process, or people. I never forgot that. That's mentoring. If I look at myself in college, a graduating batch of 1,000 people, I was probably number, 200, 300? I mean, not very bright, but not too dumb either. I mean, not bad. But if I look at myself where the Lord has taken me, praise Him, you know, I might as well have been at the top 2%. The difference is mentoring. I've got magna cum laude classmates. I've got summa cum laude classmates. They didn't make it. What's the difference? Of course, it's the sovereignty of God, but it's also mentoring, the impact of mentoring. Okay. Finally, you know, the best mentor that the Lord has ever used on my life is a woman called Lelo. She's my wife. And she's gotten so sick and tired of hearing these stories 500 times already. She used to join me in seminars. She says, oh, just go. You know, but God has used my wife. I mean, you don't know me. My wife does, in and out. And God has used my wife as the mentor, the preeminent mentor in my life. My wife knows what I think, even before I think about it. It's the most terrifying thing in the world, you know. Sometimes I ask her, since you know what I'm thinking, what am I thinking? You might as well tell me. If no one is mentoring you, go get yourself a mentor. My son Googled the author of their taxation textbook. He was getting his master's in taxation. I mean, talk about a weird kid. Okay? Actually, he got an MBA, and he couldn't find a job in New York because he was there after 9/11, right after 9/11. So the economy in New York was bad. So he said, Dad, can I get, will you support me for one more year? I want to get another graduate degree. I said, you just got an MBA? What are you talking about? I want to get another master's degree because I can't find a job, and my visa student, if I don't get a job, I have to go home. I said, come home. We miss you. He said, Dad, can you support me one more time? My strategy is I'm going to be MBA plus master's in taxation. I said, okay. I mean, you know, sometimes I feel that my children's goal in life is to make me poor. Okay? And they're trying very hard. Are you relating to this, Paul? You know, they're trying very hard, and the battle rages, you know? So I said, what do you do? He's your son. So my wife said, he's your son. Well, that's it. When my wife says, he's your son, that's it. Okay. He opens the taxation textbook, doesn't understand something. He decides to do a weird thing, a really weird thing. He Googles the author. And says, sir, my name is Paulo Castillo, classmate of Guns, by the way. I'm a graduate student here in Fordham. We're using your textbook. Would you mind very much? I'll buy you lunch, 1 hour only. I have a set of questions to help me understand the subject matter. Would you mind very much if you mentor me? And I said, what happened? Well, first, Dad, he agreed to come, and then I had to read the whole book over the weekend to sound halfway intelligent. And you know what, Dad, I don't understand. He came, and he was the one who paid for lunch. Well, I explained to him the self-affirmation box. I said, Paolo, how much email do you think, fan mail, do you think J.K. Rowling gets? You know J.K. Rowling, right? Yeah. How much email does she get? You know, in one sequel, she got 300,000. Okay? Now, how much fan mail do taxation textbook author get? Right? Why should I write you? You're a taxation textbook author. I mean, you know. So the guy opens his self-affirmation box. Finally, after many years, he comes to the conclusion, I knew it, I'm a worthwhile individual. Because here's this guy, and he wants me to mentor him. They have lunch. My son says, sir, would you mind very much if every now and then I email you and ask you questions? He said, Paolo, sure. So they get into an internet mentoring relationship. Okay? Lost my thought. Towards the end, he says, sir, would you mind very much? He asked me, why do you think he agreed that? I said, you know what? The J.K. Rowling thing. He looks at you. You are the founder, president, and sole member of his fans club. Okay? And so towards the end of that year, it took him only 1 year to do MS taxation, he asked the guy if he can be his referral in his resume. And his target was Ernst & Young. Ernst & Young is the auditing company. Their local partner is SGV. There were two openings, and about 2,000 resumes came in. My son, his QPI was 3.9. 4.0 is straight A. Lousy kid, missed it again. Okay. Actually, I haven't even approached 3.5, for crying out loud. I was so impressed. But if there is a 3.9 QPI person in Fordham, there would be a straight A student in Wharton, a straight A student in Stanford and Harvard, and these were his competitors. Two people make it. One is a straight A Harvard person, and the other one is a 3.9 QPI Fordham person. Now, Fordham is not bad. His name is Paolo Castillo. Fordham, Harvard is Ivy League, top 10. Fordham is probably top 100. I mean, not bad. There are about, 5,000 colleges in the U.S.? Not bad. But nowhere near top. Creme de la creme, okay? So, to his amazement, when he was accepted, he asked him, why? And they said, what do you mean, why? He said, why did I get in? And he said, Daddy told me a strange thing. They said, because of your integrity. And he said, you got to be kidding. You don't even know me. And they said, oh, a little bit we do. And we figured they must have checked his referral. When they saw that, you're applying in Ernst & Young, and one of the referrals is a tax author. They must have checked him. And this is what I'm speculating. They must have called up the author. I mean, who's this Filipino trying to, you know, put one over us? Doesn't he think we're going to check? Well, when that author picks up that phone, he must have just said, oh, yeah, you mean Paolo? Yeah. He's my apprentice. And that must have blown them away. So, I call those five-star mentors. He was in Ernst & Young for 4 years. And he's now with Crow and Horwath in Chicago. That's why I had to go to Chicago. If no one is mentoring you, I want you to go get yourself a mentor. But before that, I have to give you a 10-minute break.